Welcome to the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast. My name is Dara McDonald of MLB Trade Rumors. I grew up in the same town as Sum 41, and I now work for the same company as Steve Adams. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. I did not grow up in the same town as Sum 41, but I am apparently coming to you live from the bowels of hell because it is 100 degrees in St. Paul, Minnesota, with a heat index of about 112. So
yeah, it was
fun times here. Yeah, we're doing great here. Next few days are going to be real fun. So it is awful.
It is awful. It is August. It is August 22nd, to be specific. So that's why it's so hot out there. Usually not a part of the calendar that has huge baseball news because the trade deadline has been gone for a few weeks and the offseason is still a few months away. But we got a bombshell today, just probably about an hour or so before we hit record on this. The White Sox issued a statement saying that they had dismissed, I think was the language that they used, both team president Ken Williams and general manager Rick Hahn are out. Shocking news, Steve. Your reaction?
Yeah, it is shocking. I know a lot of White Sox fans have been kind of calling for this or asking, you know, how can they stick with this front office group for so long, given the lack of you know, consistent success and the manner in which the last lengthy rebuild just hasn't really panned out as they've hoped. But the general, you know, reply to that has just been that Jerry Reinsdorf, the White Sox owner, is just fiercely loyal. He, you know, loves the continuity, loves his guys. You know, we saw that when he brought Tony La Russa back to manage the Sox a couple of years ago. And he even kind of spoke to some of that in the statement. You know, he said that Ken Williams has been like a son to him. It was obvious if you just, you know, read Jerry Reinsdorf's words that this was a decision that was not made lightly. I think he probably recognized that maybe it's time for some kind of a change given the way things have progressed this year. But I think it was probably very difficult and one that he was not necessarily committed to that long ago. I feel like it's been a difficult decision for him to kind of make and come about on. And yeah, I didn't think even with the struggles that we'd get here to this point, I thought maybe they'd get one more year to try to piece things back together since they still kind of have that nice core of Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert, Andrew Vaughn. But no, they're going to make the change now and we'll see kind of what the you know, repercussions of this and the trickle-down effect is going to be in the next few days. I'm curious to see, you know, they didn't go for a full rebuild or a full, you know, fire sale, tear it down to the studs at the deadline this year, but is that something that they're going to be more open to this offseason now with a new general manager and or president of baseball operations installed? You know, will they be more open to trading someone like Cease or Michael Kopech or even Jimenez or Robert? You know, is anyone on this roster going to be off limits? I don't think anybody knows the answer to that question right now. Jerry Reinsdorf might not even know the answer to that question right now. But yeah, just very surprised, particularly with the timing of it. But lots of questions kind of spiral out from this moving forward.
Plenty of unknowns. You know, I've seen people have asked you about these guys in the chats and stuff. And, you know, you pointed out not to be too morbid about it, but, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf is 87 years old. And you sort of wondered, they just did this long rebuild where essentially the team was pretty rough for the previous decade. You know, do they want to start that whole process all over again when he's 87? And, you know, we don't know for sure that he is, but it sort of seems like there's at least a sense that something had to change, that it wasn't working. And so they've done this. I mean, I don't mean to like kick the White Sox while they're down, but, you know, a fact that's wild to me about them is that they had never made the playoffs in consecutive seasons until 2020 and 2021. And that's a team that's been around for 120 years. They've never been good 2 years in a row. And even that one, that, you know, the one time that they actually did make the playoffs 2 years in a row, one of them was the pandemic year. So it's like they've still never really made the playoffs in two full seasons in a row. So it's wild. Yeah, like you mentioned, lots of unknowns about the roster. At the deadline, it was sort of the reports were coming out of like, okay, we're going to give up impending free agents. This isn't our year. We'll try this all again next year. But then it was sort of everybody except like the core four that you mentioned of like Cease, Robert, Eloy, Andrew Vaughn. And so, you know, they did end up moving some guys like Jake Berger, who had some more control. Yeah. But so it's like, that's the big unknown in terms of like the on the field team is, you know, they're going to bring in a new somebody, a new president or general manager, whatever the title is. Is this person going to tear the whole thing down, or are they going to try to like build around those core guys? I mean, we don't know. Like you said, Jerry probably doesn't even know, but that's going to be the fascinating thing to follow in the next couple of weeks and months as we get into the off season.
Yeah. And they, you know, I think there'll be people who assume, and understandably so, but assume that this is a precursor to a rebuild and that we'll see, you know, Cease and Jimenez and some of those guys become available. But you look at the payroll next year and everything, they have under $100 million in guaranteed salary on the books next year. They have a small arbitration class where their only ARB eligible players are Cease, Michael Kopech, Garrett Crochet, Andrew Vaughn, and Trace Thompson. And I mean, they'll probably, I would imagine Thompson is a non-tender candidate. And Vaughn and Crochet are just eligible for the first time. Crochet after missing a bunch of time with injury. So like, there's certainly room to kind of say, okay, if we really do want to try to build around like that group of four or five, you know, young guys, there's room for them to go out and spend some money and, you know, kind of fill out this roster around them. I'm not sure that's the wisest course of action, but it kind of depends on what Reinsdorf, what vision he has for this team moving forward now. And I guess there's no way to know that, you know, within an hour or 75 minutes or whatever we are of him announcing the overhaul in the front office. But yeah, there's a lot of ways that this could go for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this is getting a little bit more granular, but there was also a report that we had on the site either this week or last week. Kanan Middleton was traded out of the organization and had all this stuff to say about, you know, how it wasn't a very functional organization. There was no discipline for anybody like missing a pitch or fielding practice and all this kind of stuff. And so it definitely, even from the outside, it just seemed like there was some sort of, I don't want to use too strong language. I was about to say rot, but like that seems like too hard. But like something needed to change, and it seems like they're at least recognizing that. So perhaps this will eventually go down as some sort of pivot point for the franchise, but we don't know. So moving on to elsewhere around the league, a sort of thing that's a little bit new for baseball is apparently mid-August is now prospect promotion season. Yeah. Steve, are you able to explain to our listeners why exactly this is the case now?
Sure. So under the new collective bargaining agreement, well, under the old collective bargaining agreement, I think, you know, the service time manipulation, quote unquote, that was often discussed, you know, kind of involved keeping guys down for the first three-ish weeks of the season so that they wouldn't have enough service time to get that full year in year one of their career. And effectively, you know, by keeping a guy down for two or three weeks at the beginning of the season, you're essentially buying a seventh year of club control over that person. And if they end up being a core player, that's a big deal. You know, that was, you know, Chris Bryant is one of the most high profile examples of that, but there are, you know, dozens and dozens from over the years. Under the new collective bargaining agreement, the league and the players union tried to kind of come up with a system that would more encourage and embolden teams to bring their best prospects to the majors to begin the year, you know, under the guise that, hey, fans want to see the best players. They don't want to hear that, you know, oh, so-and-so needs to, Vlad Guerrero needs to work on his defense for, and magically, you know, 15 days into the season, his defense is fixed. He's in the majors. Hooray. So no more like hollow excuses like that. But one of the ripple effects of that now is by kind of entitling teams to potential draft picks, bonus draft picks, if their top prospects make the opening day roster and win rookie of the year. It's kind of almost become the opposite, where late in the season is when you want to get some of these guys their first look As long as they spend less than 45 days on the major league roster, and I think it's under 132 at bats at the big league level, they'll retain their rookie eligibility into next year. And so I think on the day that the first day, when there were 44 days of the season left, I think we saw Nolan Chanuel and Mason Winn both called up to the majors. And since then, we've seen the Reds bring up Noel V. Marte, the Giants, Kyle Harrison, the Yankees called up Everson Pereira. It's kind of, let's get these guys some experience now. We'll retain their rookie eligibility heading into next year. And that way, you know, we can still position ourselves to potentially get a draft pick at the end of the year if they, you know, make the requisite top 100 rankings prior to the season and then go on to win rookie of the year honors. So it's kind of flipped on its head, but it's nice, I think, that rather than fans looking at a guy wondering, hey, why isn't he being called up late in the season? His numbers are amazing. And then it's not only is he not being called up late in the season, but next spring, if he goes through and tears through spring training, it's like, well, no, he's still not going to make the opening day roster and you still need to wait 3 weeks. I think it's nice for fans to be able to see these guys that they've been following, get a look at them early and in some cases in the middle of a pennant race, which is pretty cool and a fun, albeit high pressure, you know, kind of situation for those guys to jump into the big leagues. But you know, valuable experience for them in that setting as well. So it's different from the old system, but so far I think it's more fun for the fans to see.
Absolutely, 100%. And we saw this a little bit last year because I think it was both Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson were up late last year as well, getting their little bit of experience, but they still had rookie eligibility coming into this year. So, you know, both of them have the chance to give their clubs the extra draft pick. But yeah, all five of those guys that you mentioned who have been promoted in the last week, I mean, some of them, maybe because some of the teams are competitive, maybe they would have made these moves anyway, but a lot of them, you know, like with the Cardinals, with Mason Winn, like this is a lost season for them. They probably would have been tempted under the previous CBA to just keep him down until, you know, the third week of next April. So it's exciting that he's up now instead. Of these five, were any of them particularly surprising to you?
I think Chanuel, just in general, you know, less than 6 weeks after being drafted, it's a crazy rise to the majors. So I think I can't remember, you know, who first dug up the stat or reported it or whatnot, but you know, the fastest in 40 years that a position player has gone from being drafted to major league roster, which is so it's aggressive certainly, but you know, the whole book on Chanuel was that he was the most MLB ready bat in the draft. Some defensive questions about him and maybe questions about how much power he'll ultimately end up hitting for instead of just his, you know, pure hit tool and plate discipline caused him to, I don't want to say drop quote, but he, you know, he went 11th overall despite being, you know, one of the most widely considered MLB ready bats in the draft. It's surprising, but it's fun, you know. I it goes back to what we talked about on a previous episode. I don't know if the Angels were just completely buried this year. Maybe they wouldn't have rushed him that like that. They're kind of on that, like, their last gasp of trying to stay alive in postseason contention, and it doesn't appear to be going well. But I, in general, just kind of applaud the aggression and the go for it mentality. I think he's a guy that everybody expected to be in the majors before too long. So I don't think you worry about, you know, he's going to end up burning through all of his option years now that he was called up this soon. So they can always send him back down next year if, you know, it's just not working out and he just looks like he needs some more time in the upper minors. But yeah, I was definitely very surprised when I saw that, but it's kind of cool. And that's been the Angels' MO in general over the past few years has just been, we're going to draft college polished players who can be in the majors, you know, within a year and a half of us drafting them. This is the most extreme example, but you know, if you're an agent, you know, representing a college kid in the draft, I mean, you're hoping that the Angels take your guy because, you know, you're going to get him to free agency faster and get him into the majors sooner than later. So
defensive questions on Chanuel, and yet he turns a triple play in his first game. Pretty amazing stuff.
True.
And Shohei Ohtani hit a grand slam in that game, and they lost in classic Angels fashion.
That's like the most Angels just sentence ever, which is I hate to rag on them. But that is like the modern embodiment of the tungsten Armo Doyle meme right there. That's tough.
It is. Well, elsewhere around the league, some grim news for Shane McClanahan, because it was reported a couple weeks ago, you know, Kevin Cash came out and said it was unlikely that he was going to be able to return. And he said, you know, everything's on the table from, you know, a quick turnaround to, you know, removing like bone chips or whatever to all the way up to Tommy John surgery. And then the news came out this week that worst case scenario was coming true. It is going to be Tommy John surgery. And because of where the calendar is, he's going to miss not just this year, but probably, unless he's extremely fortunate, probably all of next year as well. Just this Rays pitching staff, Steve, what do you, I'm lost for words here.
It's, yeah, you know, at the beginning of the year, everything seemed so promising for the Rays. They got out to that dominant historic start, and you just look at the injuries that they've had on that pitching staff, and you know, you're now down McClanahan, Shane Baz. I mean, they knew Baz wasn't going to pitch this year heading into the season because he had Tommy John last September. But then Drew Rasmussen and Jeffrey Springs, you know, you lose 60% of your rotation to season ending surgery. In McClanahan's case, you know, like you said, he'll probably miss most of next year. It's frustrating for Rays fans because they have these three ace caliber pitchers in McClanahan and Shane Baz and Tyler Glasnow, you know, all under control and all, you know, at the same time and all affordable at the same time. And it was this kind of like tantalizing group. And it increasingly looks like we're just never going to see those three healthy in the same rotation together. You know, Glasnow is only signed through the 2024 season. And McClanahan will probably miss most of that year now. Maybe he'll be back late in 2024 or in the 2024 postseason if they get there. But It's just tough. Like, you look at, you know, on the one hand, the Rays deserve credit for the manner in which they can just churn out, you know, these great pitchers and take kind of hidden gems like Jeffrey Springs and turn him into this, you know, quality big league pitcher. They're the big league starter. They're trying to do the same thing with Zach Littell right now, who's kind of, you know, journeyman reliever, who's getting an opportunity in the rotation and pitching decently so far. It's a testament to their player development and everything, but when you have so many talented pitchers, and given just the general rate at which pitchers break, the attrition rate with starting pitchers, I guess you're bound to kind of run into some of these stretches. But it still seems like a particularly bad or particularly potent stretch of bad luck for them to lose so many quality arms in such short order. And yeah, I think it's just going to go down as kind of a what might have been situation to if you could have had, you know, all those guys healthy at once. I mean, we're talking one of the best rotations in recent major league history.
Yeah. And in the short term, you know, obviously they're still in playoff position despite all the injury setbacks, but you know, losing McClanahan is just, you know, that's like your playoff starter, you know, like in those shortened series, you know, like wild card series or moving on to the DS and the CS where you have, you know, you lean heavily on your top guys, you know, McClanahan's a difference maker and now he's out of there. So, you know, it's going to hurt them this year, even if they do hang on and make the playoffs, and it completely changes the 2024 rotation as well. So grim news there. We'll see how it plays out. Okay, let's get to some questions. We asked you for some questions and we got some questions. We're going to start out with a question from Ben, who asks, with the Reds calling up Noelvi Marte, how do they fit in playing time for all of their rookie position players? After keeping Nick Senzel at the deadline, what kind of return could they get for trading him during the offseason?
Yeah, I don't want to lean too heavily into cliches here, but this is kind of the quintessential, like, quote, good problem to have. And it has been for a while for them. You know, they just have so many talented, mostly young infielders. But between not just Marte, but you've had Matt McLean come up and impress right away, Ellie De La Cruz, Spencer Steer, Christian Encarnacion Strand has reached the majors. They just have so much young talent on the rise there. It does kind of bring up some questions about, okay, well, what is Nick Senzel's future role with this team? Is Jonathan India still the second baseman of the future? You know, he only has 3 years of club control left. His name kind of popped up before the deadline. I tend to think that these things sort themselves out, and you don't necessarily just, you know, make a trade because you feel like you have too many infielders. Pretty much all of these guys still have minor league options remaining. I do think Senzel is probably the closest to an odd man out. I know he's been playing, you know, outfield as well as infield since he kind of made it to the majors and has bounced all over the place. But he's had a lot of injuries. He's never really hit. And, you know, he's to the point now where he's over 4 years of big league service time. He's 28 years old. He was the number two overall pick in the draft back in 2016 and a longtime top prospect, but it just hasn't really panned out the way that the Reds envisioned and that a lot of scouts and analysts from, you know, teams all around baseball envisioned. I think everyone thought Nick Senzel had a real good chance to be a quality everyday big leaguer. And now he's kind of to the point where I don't think the value is going to be that high. I think if you trade him and you get even, you know, a reliever that you can kind of plug into the bullpen, I think they'd be happy with that. He's not somebody who I think is even, you know, guaranteed to be tendered a contract if it gets to that point. You know, he had a $1.95 million deal this year to avoid arbitration, but the Reds don't have to commit anything to him. And they have, as Ben pointed out in his question, so much young talent. It would be painful to just cut him loose for nothing. But I don't know that the value is all that high. So it's going to be a tough call for them, but yeah, I don't envision a significant amount of trade value there. Do you read that differently?
No, I think you're correct. And, you know, I think the control, like you pointed out, is an excellent point. You know, like this is a team, like, because they have promoted so many rookies this year, like this team could be competitive for the next, like this year and six more. Just because they have this core. So like a guy like Senzel, as much as like, you know, he seemed to have like a decent part on the team earlier, he's been optioned. He's like in the minors now. So even right now, he's already been squeezed out and, you know, he's only under control for a couple more years. So I think if they really wanted to win in the next like year or two, then they would have been more aggressive at the deadline. The fact that they did very little suggests that they are thinking like long-term. Even if, you know, if they kind of fall short this year, I don't think that they're that worried about it because it's like, you know, we have 6 years with this core. We don't need to win right now. So I feel like Senzel is squeezable in that sense. And maybe even India as well, because he's going to finish this year at 3 years of service time. So we'll see how that goes. It depends how much they value, you know, we talked about this before, all the like intangible clubhouse leader type stuff, because in terms of a pure roster fit thing, he is looking like, you know, like they could be fine without him. But, you know, everybody in the clubhouse apparently loves him. So that's something that they'll have to weigh this offseason.
Yeah, and I think too, just to be clear, you're talking about India with the clubhouse leadership and everything like that.
That's right.
But I tend to think that the Reds, because of that, just inherently are going to value him more than other teams. You know, I got asked again today, like, you know, what's a package with India headlining a deal for someone like Logan Gilbert out in Seattle? And I just there's just no way that's going to be deemed equal value for me. I don't think, you know, India himself is going to like front a package for a high end starting pitcher that they can plug into the rotation. I think, you know, teams generally see second baseman as fairly fungible. He's been about league average at the plate the past 2 years since his really nice rookie of the year season. He's a nice player, but like he's not somebody who, you know, and he's in arbitration now. So he's just not somebody who I think another team is going to say like, yeah, we'll give up multiple years of this mid rotation starter to get India in here.
Okay, moving on to next question. We actually have two questions here from two different Mets fans who want to know basically what kind of offseason we can expect. Are they going to sign big free agents? Those are questions from Robert and someone who has to be credited as disappointed Mets fan.
Disappointed Mets fan speaks for a lot of the fan base right now, I think. You know, I do think that they'll still be fairly aggressive on the free agent market. I know Scherzer kind of talked about how after he was traded about how they were looking more toward 2025 and beyond than necessarily next season as a target date for really competing, and next year might be more of a transitional season. But there are still ways that you can be aggressive in free agency and align with that general mentality. They signed Kodai Senga for $75 million this offseason. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, is going to be likely posted by Japan's Oryx Buffaloes this year. And he is a capital A ace over in NPB. He's the best pitcher in that league. He is having a silly video game like season with a low one ERA and tons of strikeouts and no walks. And he is 25 years old. Now, I think even if you're looking at next year as a transition type season, signing someone like that, or perhaps, going out and trying to put together some kind of a trade for controllable young pitching or controllable big league ready, hitters. There's certainly ways that they can add to this roster, even if the broader goal is to have a more earnest push back into contention in 2025 and beyond. And I just think Steve Cohen is too aggressive of an owner to just kind of sit back and say, well, we're not going to sign anybody this offseason. We'll ride with what we have and we'll go from there. I don't think that aligns with the general, MO that we've seen from the Mets under Cohen and Billy Epler.
Okay, and a last question here. This is from Ben, a different Ben from the first question. Of the teams that have exceeded the base luxury tax threshold this season, which ones do you see as the most likely to dip back below during the coming off season?
I know you went through and did a lot of research on this. The Blue Jays come to mind for me as like one of the easy ones. They are not over by that much, although they're over by about $10 million. But they have $135 million on their luxury tax ledger, according to Roster Resource, next year. So they're going to be $100 million underneath. I think they can pretty quickly and easily reset their luxury bill, even with a pretty expensive arbitration class.
I'm going to say the Angels because, this sort of assumes that they miss out on Ohtani and then decide to sort of take a step back. But they also have a bunch of guys coming off. In addition to Ohtani, they have like Hunter Renfroe and Giolito and Gio Urshela and Randall Grichuk and CJ Krohn and Matt Moore. They have a whole bunch coming off, and Roster Resource currently pegs their CBT number for next year at $131 million. So they could spend $100 million next winter and still be under the line. So I think the Angels, but who knows? Maybe Artie Moreno has some tricks up his sleeve. We will see. But that's all the time that we have for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out MLBTradeRumors.com for all of our content. You can also sign up for the newsletter and get analysis delivered straight to your inbox. And, we're going to keep doing it on the podcast. And you can even sign up for the front office package and get rid of those ads and get some extra content. But as for the podcast, we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to visit MLBTradeRumors.com and follow us on Twitter at MLBTradeRumors.